Ears like a radar, eyes like a fire, feet like a mare, hair like a wire. He's the blue tongue cat and the alligator king dog.
Ah, the strains of Clarence Gapemouth Brown opening our monthly show on dog behavior. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Celeste Quinn is away. Unfortunately, she does not have the opportunity to speak to our guests this month for the Dog Behavior Show. Carol Lindholm and James Keel, as always, welcome.
Hello,
good
Tom.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
And
Carol's on my headphones.
I gave him my headphones.
Get the technical problem sorted out before the show. Thank you. As they are here each month to talk about dog behavior and answer your questions. That's the main point of our show today. And if you have questions concerning dog behavior or any other questions concerning dogs, I guess they are not veterinarians, but or are you?
No.
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 I had to think there for a second.
General dog questions,
though. He wears a lot of hats,
though,
but not that one.
Behavior or otherwise are welcome, and you can call them in. The number is 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. And outside the Champaign-Urbana area within Illinois and Indiana, you can call us at 1-800-222-9455. 333-WILL or 1-800-222-WILL. And call early. That's your best opportunity. We often have a log jam of calls later in the show. So if you have those questions just burning to be answered, be sure to give us a call as soon as possible, and we'll answer them for you. You will answer them for you.
Well, I'll bet you that you jump in somewhere in the course of the hour.
Okay, I've got a little personal experience with dog behavior, being an owner of a Siberian Husky, and I noticed that Jim is raises Alaskan Malamutes.
Beautiful pictures, aren't they?
Just slightly
Celeste
bigger.
Always wants me to bring in pictures. I thought I'd show them again to everybody in the radio audience.
Yes.
Radio, I like these.
Oddly enough, this is Tom, my dog, at the weight pull.
Not to be confused with
the host.
The host couldn't pull what this dog is pulling.
I couldn't even load that sled that the dog is pulling with the bricks.
Who gets this enviable job of loading these things?
People putting it on. This guy here.
But each year, the Alaska Malamute Club holds a sled pulling contest. But the sleds, in this case, are wheeled carts loaded with weight, with ballast, with bricks. And we're looking at pictures of Tom, who's an all-white Malamute.
He's very beautiful in person, too. This doesn't let you see that.
And he's pulling, how many bricks is that? And how much does bricks weigh?
I think this picture was taken, he eventually pulled 2,025 pounds. Here it's about 1,800.
Isn't that incredible? That's amazing.
It's incredible to watch them, too.
Of course, that's what Malamutes were raised for, too.
Yeah, the Eskimos were constantly pulling
patio stones
16 feet.
No, they had to pull ice to build their icebergs.
No, they dug it right there. They were
I know.
Igloos.
I'm trying to just keep you going.
Okay, thanks.
And your other picture is the standard
dog show. Is the national specialty put on by the club once a year. And this event that is pictured here, show it to everybody in the audience.
Isn't that beautiful? Look at
Hold
that
it
ribbon.
Up right to the microphone, please.
There you go. That's our Ross with Robin Handling, and it's called the Top 20 Competition. You can't enter that unless you're one of the top 20 winning Malamutes for the previous year. Ross was number 6, I think.
Did he get to open his own invitation?
AP that puts out the rankings, or?
Pardon?
No, never mind.
Pardon?
It's just the host being obnoxious. They win the ranking throughout the year.
Yeah, they go to shows, and it's based on how many dogs you defeat.
Uh-huh.
With the best of breed, and once again, we didn't win it.
Yeah. Explain a little about what makes a dog show winner. How is a dog
It's a judged event like ice skating or gymnastics. In this particular case, there are 3 judges. Usually there's only 1. We have found that 3 judges doesn't make it any more fair than just having 1, but it looks better.
What do they judge on?
Well, there's a written standard that is adopted by the parent club, the Malamute Club, and then incorporated in the American Kennel Club standards. And the judge is supposed to have that standard in mind. You know, the dog should have 2 ears and all that kind of stuff. And then he looks at the dogs.
One-ear dogs would have a bit of a disadvantage.
Well, yeah, you know, he's got 2. And then the judge looks at the dogs there that day and says, which of these dogs comes closest to that written standard? And that's, in theory, the dog he picks. A lot of other things go into it, but that's what's supposed to go into it.
Stretch it out a little. How is the standard decided upon?
That's made up by a committee of people. Here's a dog that's a result of a committee. The parent club, the Malamute Club of America, will appoint a committee, and they'll all get together and write the standard. There are certain terms of art that are used. I wasn't on the committee. Robin was on the committee. I was on the board of directors that reviewed the work of the committee and, in fact, rewrote the whole thing.
Really? That made you popular, didn't it?
I remember we were in Los Angeles at the National that year, and it was like 2 in the morning, and we were going over the standard, and I observed. I was the first one to observe that the standard was very good, except it didn't mention the head. So as long as you had a dog that had no head, you
had the body of a Malamute and the head
of
a Chihuahua. It
didn't
matter
what the head. So
great Malamute you have there.
That meant we had another night of work ahead of us. So. Mm-hmm.
It was a good thing you observed that.
Yeah, it would have been embarrassing to send it out without a head, the headless dog.
Because the head of a Malamute plays a big role in there.
Well, it shouldn't,
but it does.
Yeah, pretty takes you a long way.
Now, I assume when you review this, you make slight changes, and the standard changes over time. That you've got, you know, 20 years ago, you're looking for different things.
This particular change wasn't really a change in the standard we were doing. It was the AKC wanted everybody to use the same language. For example, the hawks are well let down. Oh, what does that mean? No one knows what that means. So,
if you're a breeder or show, you know.
Well, if you're in the dog biz, you come to learn what that means, but it's not obvious when you read it. So they're trying to get more standardized language for all breeds. So we didn't want to change the standard, but we got together, okay, and we standardized the language. And then a year after we did it, and of course, as soon as you do that, people across the country are saying, you're changing the standard, you're ruining everything. Which was probably true, but we did it anyway, and the AKC said, we've changed our minds. You can do it or not. We don't care. So we could have avoided a lot of controversy if they had said that a year earlier.
And the job of the breeder, the goal of the breeder is try to find dogs that as closely as possible match those standards.
In theory, usually you breed what you want and then say that it's close to, oh, look, this is pretty standard. For example, look at Ross's tail. That's not a correct tail. I go, yeah, it's not. See? It's not per the standard.
It
but
fits.
It fits him, doesn't it?
It's a tight tail, but I'll tell you one thing about a tight tail. It's always up. They never put them down. So for showing purposes,
and that's not a good thing.
It's a good tail, but this judge right here, he didn't like that tail at all.
This is so subjective.
Very.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Suggestive.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it kind of fun in a way, because you never really know for certain
who's going to do well.
We lost a... Oh, there it is.
It's right here.
It's
a little more objective on the weight pull. They either pull it or they don't.
Yeah. How far do they have to pull those weights? It looks like a little track.
Yeah, it's just a very low cart, flat cart.
And there's just sort of a small concrete area that they...
This was, in fact, on a tennis court, which was good because it was flat. When there's snow, that we do that on a sled or a sledge.
Yeah.
But when there's no snow, you got to... The real problem with this particular cart was, see those balloon tires?
Mm-hmm.
At the low weights, it didn't matter. But when you got up to a ton,
they flattened out.
So the dog wasn't actually having trouble pulling the weight. They were having trouble pulling those tires.
Anybody think of that before?
I don't know. The guy who won, Tommy weighed 107 pounds. The guy who won had a 150-pound dog. Which was the second winningest dog in the Pacific Northwest last year under the IWPA, the International Weight Pull Association. He thought that they left the tires flat for a reason, so his dog couldn't pull a lot of weight. All right? So it's not as objective.
You said it wasn't objective.
It's not as objective as you think.
That's a subtle form of sabotage.
Yeah, boy.
Now, I mean, the dogs look like they're obviously exerting a lot of effort, but they enjoy doing this. How do you motivate them? How do you get them to do what I wouldn't want to pull a car on the
sled. We have an epistemological problem. You know, who knows what the dog enjoys? But Tommy really digs in, and I never taught him to do any of that. We taught him to pull a sled, which.
He just thinks it's a heavy sled, apparently.
He shares with other dogs, and, you know, I don't weigh 2,000 pounds, so if I'm on the back of the sled, he might be pulling 50 pounds. Of course, he does it for 10 or 20 miles.
Yeah. Is this just an innate urge that
actually he he's been a good puller, but it wasn't until last year that he really figured out how to do it with the minimal training we've been giving him. I kind of worry about, you know, injury when they get up to higher level.
If he because the whole goal, I mean, you're pulling progressively heavier weights.
It's heavier and heavier, and people drop out. As people drop out, as the dogs drop out, they add weight. And so it's not only heavier, but there's less time between pulls.
How do you how do you tell a dog that it's over, you're out of the race or out of the contest?
Because you just watch them. If they don't pull, there's nothing you can do to make them pull.
Yeah, right.
You can't use food or anything like that.
But you have to watch out that they don't hurt themselves.
You got to watch out. We've never had an injury ever at any weight pull I've ever heard of. Mm-hmm. The dogs can hurt themselves, though, if especially younger dogs, if you hook them up and they're slack in the line, and when they go, they run and they hit the end of the line, like the dog is chasing Bugs Bunny, remember? Mm-hmm. So to avoid that, before you leave them, you get the dog out till just before he's pulling the thing, so it's already taut before you leave. Then they can't snap themselves.
Jim and Carol are here to answer your questions on dog behavior. If you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, and outside the area, 1-800-222-9455. Just think of 9455 equals WILL, 333-WILL or 1-800-222-WILL. Well, I want to get into later on in the hour. We can talk about some of the information that's out there for dog owners and some new things that are coming out on the internet. The internet has just information on just about everything else. Why not dog behavior? We'll talk about what's out there and what do you watch out for and see if it's credible information. Because not only is the internet a wellspring of information, but you have to watch out for what's the right information. We have a call on line one. Good afternoon from Champaign.
Good afternoon. I have a quick question about some destructive behavior that we've just kind of noticed in our 3-year-old dog. He stays in the laundry room while we're gone, and he was crate trained, and he's a small dog, just under 20 pounds, and it's very, very comfortable in the laundry room, and he's more comfortable in enclosed spaces than if he had the entire run of the house. He has a dog bed in the laundry room, and because he sheds a bit, we put a sheet over it. In the past 2 weeks, he's noticed that he can pull the sheet off and shred it and eat part of his bed. And this isn't behavior that he's ever exhibited before. And so I replaced the sheet, thinking maybe it was getting a little frayed, and he has now shredded the new sheet too.
He learns quickly.
He does, and he does it really well. Well, my husband's a civil engineer, and I think the dog must take after him because all of the pieces are pretty much even in terms of they're all the same size. They're very congruent. So,
I think he was entertaining himself. What do you think, Jim?
To a great extent, especially if he took the trouble to tear the thing evenly. That shows some forethought.
Using scissors and a ruler.
He probably can't wait for the next one because he probably wants to do different
designs. I worry. We lost a dog under not dissimilar circumstances. We had him out. We used to keep him out on the kind of the back porch. It was a small thing. We had the laundry stuff out there and the washer and dryer. And how old was he? He was like 8 years old and had never done anything stupid in his life other than what normally dogs do, and he ate a towel, small towel, but hand towel. And the problem, what happened was it got into his intestines, and it telescoped. It kind of unraveled, and then every time he'd have that peristaltic movement, the bowels go through to push stuff through, since it was all twisted around and telescoped out, it started slicing into his bowel.
He doesn't seem to be doing that because I've checked the sheet, and of course I've taken it off, after he starts.
I'm sorry, my thing popped here. You checked the what?
I was concerned. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that humor was really subtle.
No, my earphones are popping here. Okay. Well, Carol gave me the bad earphones.
I know, I did that intentionally.
because I was concerned about him ingesting the sheet. And he doesn't seem to be doing that. The other thing is that he seems to have discovered that he can put the sheet in his water, and that maybe that's kind of funny, too.
Now he's entertaining himself. Does he have anything else to play with back there?
He does, but the problem is it's kind of strange because he likes to chew on rawhides, and he's a little mutt, and he's got some beagle and some cocker spaniel in him, and he likes his rawhides, but he won't chew or play while we're gone with his toys. Like, mm-hmm. if we put his rawhide down on the bed, it's in exactly the same place, and it's unchewed when we return.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because he's never played with any of the toys that have been in there, but now he's just kind of discovered the sheet and the water and
the
bed.
He was evidently looking for a higher level of entertainment than the...
So maybe
he really chewed the sheet in the same size little pieces?
Yeah.
Squares?
Yeah, we're pretty proud of him.
It's pretty amazing. Well, I would...
What's the problem?
He can help you with your next quilting project.
I wouldn't put a sheet down again because he's only going to repeat the same action.
But my concern, once he figured out that the bed was under the sheet, that he's also started to chew on the bed.
What's the bed made out of?
The bed is made out of just kind of a Land's End type of dog bed.
They love to chew those things up.
Yeah.
It's so self-reinforcing. It's so rewarding. I've come home many times to those.
Have you changed laundry detergents or started using some new softener or something?
Oh, actually we did. We had some detergents that we had gotten from...
You're a genius.
Yeah.
I am a genius, yes. Dogs, they love soap. There's something in the odorizer. You ever go to Wolf Park? Wolf Park is over near Lafayette, Indiana. I'll give them a plug. I get $10 every time I mention them. it's in Battleground. What they do, they have a colony of wolves, and one of their little demonstrations is they'll take real perfume and pour it on the ground. And the wolves go over and sniff it and start rolling in it. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they want to smell good. It's the base is usually musk.
Mm-hmm.
Our dogs love to eat Kleenex, used or otherwise. And it's not because they like... It's because there's something in this perfume that they use that the dogs really like. If you started using a new detergent, or especially a new softener or something like that, it may have some chemical in there that the dog... really likes and enjoys tearing up.
Hmm. Which would explain, then, he's chewing the sheet and got a lot of enjoyment of that, and then went right to the dog.
Well, the odor then would have gotten on mm-hmm. the bed, too.
That's an interesting theory.
Would the confinement make any difference at all?
Especially since
he was raised with a crate, he's sort of used to being a...
Yeah, dogs are actually in the wild, or wolves are anyway. They're den dwellers. They actually live in the ground, and they only go out when it's safe and tough.
Well, I was just thinking of the lack of stimulation while he's in there. Perhaps he was just bored and just was, started chewing on the sheet, and next thing he knows, he's making little squares.
If it's not the laundry detergent, is there a type of bed that would be better, maybe? Or because the other thing is that in the past, what I've done is to put a fitted sheet because it winds around the bed a little bit better. I mean, it's much larger, obviously, but I tuck it in and he kind of seems to go for the elastic first.
Mm-hmm.
Should I try maybe a flat sheet before? Is there a better bed to try? Or
what kind of bed? It's just a little... Why do you cover the bed with a sheet in the first place?
Oh, because he sheds, and because if not, it gets pretty thick and it's difficult to wash the bed. So I've just been and it seems to for the past few years it's worked like a charm. Mm-hmm. I have washed the bed, yes, but it made it easier because I could wash the sheet.
No, there's nothing wrong with washing the bed. I was just thinking that may be where the odor came from.
Not recently.
If he's going to eat the bed, I don't think there's any bed that he won't eat.
I would just not put a bed down for him.
Yeah.
So kind of like solitary?
Maybe a rubber pad or a piece of rug. He'd eat that.
Yeah,
too.
I think I'd just take it away for now and give him some toys back, and when he gets bored, he'll chew his toys. That's what I would do.
Yeah. My concern is, as I mentioned before, if he eats cloth, if he tears it up, sooner or later he's going to eat it.
He's going to swallow it.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I'm not being a bad pet owner or a cruel pet owner if I take away the bed?
No.
Okay.
One of my dogs has beds that she sleeps on, the other one doesn't. He doesn't prefer to sleep on a bed. He sleeps in the hall, which is marble. That's the hardest surface on the planet.
But it's also cool.
So, that's why he sleeps. Yeah, but he wouldn't sleep on a bed if I gave him one. He'd destroy it because he likes to do those things with those beds.
Yeah. Okay. Try sleeping in a hole in the ground sometime.
Well, great. Well, thank you. We'll put him in solitary for a while then.
Oh, well, that just sounds like, I don't think that's advice.
Bread and water.
Give him his toys and just take the bed away. He'll be fine.
That sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
Let's go on now to prison or something. Line 2 in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi, I've got a 3-year-old yellow lab that is pretty good disposition. And the only thing I've noticed lately in the last week and a half, we work full time and he has been tearing up things, similar to your previous caller, so I guess I'm going to try to get him some rawhides or something, maybe entertain him a little bit more. But if I'm reading the newspaper at night, I mean, he's been walked and everything, I'll read the newspaper at night, he'll come up and kind of an aggressive behavior. You know, he'll just barks at me, and I think he wants me to chase him, which we chase him and chase him. But it's kind of like an
invitation to play.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, and then he really gets spun out, you know, and he starts barking, which he's done a barking dog. And then eventually, you know, we'll say, that's enough. And then we'll probably, you know, get him corralled underneath the dining room table and put a, you know, the leash on him. It's like, oh, whole different attitude. I'm a good pup now. So.
What do you do after you put the leash on him?
Pardon?
What do you do after you put the leash on him?
Well, usually we put him in the crate. So for kind of a penalty box, we call it, to kind of cool down a little bit and get your attitude back together. Or else we make him go and sit, you know, do a sit and stay kind of command.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done that the last couple of evenings, and he still seems to be doing it. I mean, I was just reading the newspaper, and I just looked at him.
You know, I've almost completely stopped reading the newspaper.
You don't even get the newspaper.
I don't get it, and if I see it, the
that's because all Jim's dogs.
I found out my boss was running for city council because we had puppies, and you know, we got newspapers. Laying them down on the floor. Oh, Tom ran for city council. That's great.
The dog wants attention.
Yeah, you're just sitting there apparently not doing
it. She's gone.
Hopefully she's listening.
But the dog wants attention, and they just taught it by playing with it and chasing it that
yeah, if you're sitting there reading a newspaper, the dog thinks that you're not really doing anything. And, in fact, I think that too, obviously. So the dog just wants to play. I wouldn't call that aggressive behavior. It's just trying to get attention. Trying to get somebody to move. If I'm at the computer, for example, at home, and Frosty, I don't have a picture of Frosty.
He looks like Tommy.
He looks like Tommy.
He's
only
white,
he's
too.
Bigger. Frosty will come up and get his nose under my right arm, and I start deleting stuff. You know, bang, he knocks my arm, and there goes. And that's like, his way of saying, what are you sitting there for? Why don't you play with me?
That's identical to my dog.
They all do that.
Backs off a couple of steps and then just gives a little bark.
Roof.
Just a little,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's cute. And then usually stop and laugh. It's mm-hmm. cute. And they say, oh, that yeah. worked.
And especially chasing the dog around. What does the dog want to do? He wants to play. So he annoys the lady, and she's annoyed. She gets up and chases him. Well, from the dog's point of view, that's what
hey,
he wanted.
Fun.
Hey, chase me. Okay. And when he gets the collar on, then the game's over, and then he goes and lies in the crate.
He might need a bit more exercise, perhaps, too. It's hard to tell. I don't know. How long a dog walk he goes
She and her
for.
Husband apparently work all day. They're gone all day. They give him some attention, but he obviously thinks he should have more. And you're dealing with a sporting breed that they have a lot of energy to begin with. And the problem with it is if you exercise them a lot and do that, that gets them in shape, and they want even more exercise.
What would constitute a good exercise session for a dog like
I'd
that?
I'd say, you know, you can't run your dogs anywhere off lead, but a good 45-minute brisk walk wouldn't hurt anybody, actually. What do you think, Jim?
45 minutes. Man, my back started to hurt.
You're not pulling that.
And I'm going, yeah,
45, you know, walk around the block's not going
to
do it.
I'd have to lose 10 pounds before I could do 10 minutes.
10 years, too.
Yeah, 10 years off wouldn't hurt either.
I'd say, 30 minutes. Is that better? Minimum of 30 minutes. Or it's too bad they can't come home during the day and give them a little walk, 20 minutes or so. Play the throw the ball in the yard. Of course, it's hard now. It's dark out. They have those glow balls,
it may not be exercise so much as attention.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell without seeing the dog, but whatever he ploy he managed to employ worked, and he'll just continue to do it. They're going to have to be a little resourceful.
Our phone numbers, again, your questions on dog behavior are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and 1-800-222-9455. Our guests on the Afternoon Magazine today, Carol Lindholm and James Keel. And we'll be here until about 10 minutes before 2 o'clock. So your questions are welcome and invited. I talked a little earlier about some of the behavior information that may be out on the Internet. More people are getting on and online and finding sites that purport to answer questions on dog behavior. Some are good, some maybe not. Any recommendations at all that you know, or anything that you've heard of about?
Well, of course, now that you ask that, every site that I've been to,
and it's all, I mean,
you know, there's good, there's better, there's poor. I think that there's one, as a matter of fact, that I find real good, and I just realized what it was. It's flyingdogpress.com.
Flying Dog Press.
Yeah, and they've got some really good articles out there. I was just there a few days ago. Very well written and current methodology out there. Mm-hmm. So that's one if somebody wants to write that down. It's a good one. And then I don't know.
Well, I'll pull out my Luddite card, but I sit at the computer looking up dog behavior articles, and I've got 20 dogs around me, and I'm thinking, well, I know how to learn dog behavior. I'll just go out and play with my dogs. I think the Internet is, I've expressed myself elsewhere in the Malamute list, that it's, it allows stupid people, no, people with more opinions than brains to communicate with other people at nearly the speed of...
Did they kick you off the list?
Speed of light.
But it's all an inexact science, too.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't go from site to site and expect to see the same thing.
Well, no, I don't agree with that necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, there should be some consistency in the information that you're reading. If you find something, and this is the way I look at it, find something that is either reprehensible to you and is not something that you've seen, then, yeah, I think that you should raise your eyebrows. But you know, I think that sometimes, I just had a call from a woman last week who was trying to house train a, how old is that dog, 14 weeks old. She has a computer at home, she has access to the Internet, but she's still house training the dog by rubbing his face, his nose, and the excrement. Now, that appalled me, number one. I don't know why people continue to do that, but
pretty
much two,
understood as a no-no.
Yeah, you'd think, but you'd be still appalled at the number of people that still employ that.
Uh-oh, sorry.
He doesn't do that. But I thought, well, here she's got the world at her fingertips, and she's having a problem she hasn't been successful in solving, but she never thought to look there. Mm-hmm. And any site she go to would certainly suggest you not to do what she was doing. So,
well, how do you then separate the wheat from the chaff, a good site from a bad site?
I can pick them up pretty quick.
I've seen several Malamute sites, people with kennels, and you know, people who've never bred a litter talking about their breeding program, and I don't know how to. The lawyer in me says, "Well, you know, they have the right to publish whatever they want."
Well, see, that's the crux of the matter.
So that's a price we pay for the First Amendment, but there's just so much bad information. Until the Internet has been around for 2,000 or 3,000 years, I would tend not to trust what. And the site Carol mentions, that's a commercial site. They're trying to sell people stuff.
Mm-hmm, but the articles are there for you to read.
Yeah, and I have never read it, so I won't say they're good or bad articles. But the articles are there to get people to buy whatever it is that the article came
from. Well,
they
have a number of wonderful links, too. They do have that.
Generally, they're commercial links. Now, there's nothing
Jim's
wrong.
Being a little tiny bit of skeptic today.
There's nothing wrong with selling books and or anything like that.
Well, now you have taken this information only because the URL said pressing it.
I'm not.
You've made this into a big commercial venture because of the name of the URL. Because it ended.
Yeah, I tried to disclaim. I said I'm ignorant on what
the
it
cynic
is.
In
and
him
I'll
is
try
appearing.
Not to. I'm just saying generally. It's like going to a bookstore and reading the dust cover. Well, the dust cover is there to
make you buy the book.
Get you interested in reading the book.
You know, I was,
and buying the book, not reading it, buying it.
If I were going to want, if I w- were attempting to learn something about a subject of which I had little knowledge, this is how I would do it. And this is not a plug for Amazon, but I would go to that site.
For instance, or any book club site, of course.
Amazon seems to be one that's really well organized.
How about Barnes & Noble?
I don't go there.
I get 10 bucks every time I mention Barnes.
At any rate, I did this the other night again, because I always go to that site and look for new books that are out on behavior and so forth. And they have reviews that are submitted by, I would assume, people that really don't have any...
brains.
Motive other than the fact that they want to share some good information with people. And that's where I would start if I wanted to do something different.
I'd call you.
He's antagonizing me today.
Just buyer beware. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Cave canem, no? Caveat emptor.
I knew you were going to say that today. I thought about that the other day. I knew you were going to use the word caveat somewhere today.
Ah.
No, this is what I tell my classes. If somebody, and this is not anything to do with information that you're going to get off the internet, but if somebody tells you to do something that you feel is not in your best interest, that's going to cause harm to your relationship with your dog, then don't do it. It's that simple.
All right.
Or if you want to learn about your dog, take a stick and go in the backyard and play with your dog.
Yes.
You'll learn a lot more about your dog than...
Well, if Jim and Carol haven't answered your question already... with that very brief but very, very sage advice, give us a call, 333-9455.
You know, you've got a good point. He's got a good point. Spending time with your dog and playing with it is going to tell you volumes about your particular dog. This woman that had called me last week had purchased a specific breed of dog. She had done very little, or I should say no research on it, and found it impossible to live with. That's the way those dogs are, very difficult to live with for a good number of people, but other people delight in those very characteristics. So,
what would be a good basic area for research if you just wanted to learn about, you know, what kinds of dogs different breeds are?
The American Kennel Club book.
Yeah, as long as we're talking about the internet, the AKC, I'm more familiar with them. They have a website, which is www. I think we ought to rename the letter W.
You don't have to say it anymore. It's a given.
I know, but I think we ought to call it woo. All right?
Because you don't want to say www.
Yeah, exactly. So we say woo, woo, woo.
You don't have to do that anymore.
It sounds like you're talking to your dog. It's woo, woo, woo dot AKC dot org.
That's it.
And it's got links to every breed club. And then, for example, the Malamute Breed Club has a map of the country or something, and you can... click on that and find breeders near you.
Mm-hmm. Golden Club does too.
And
email them personally.
You can email them. You can call them up. You can annoy them in the middle of the night. Whatever you want to do. But I wouldn't read stuff off the internet. I'd find somebody who had that breed and just talk to them and say, what's it like? Do they eat towels? You know, do they commit suicide by eating towels? Do they go through walls? How much do they eat? How long do they live? That kind of stuff.
Spend some time with one before you buy one.
Yeah.
Those are key factors to being successful.
We have a caller on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hey, I've got a great site on dog behavior for you.
What is it?
www.cuhumane.org.
Oh, I know who this is.
Carol, I was waiting for you to mention it.
Well, you have to introduce us now.
This is a dog friend of ours. Her dog eats towels and whatnot.
My dog.
She didn't do research. No. You know, we probably would have gotten around to that. You are correct. CUHumane.org is a marvelous site.
We have quite an extensive pet library online, and people should check it out. And Carol, we could use some more articles.
Well, she's going to put the heat on me in
she
public way.
She did some great stuff for us on house training the older dog and so on, and.
Well, thank you, Barb.
I urge you to check that
Flattery
out.
Flattery always works.
I see her, Jim. She has the same old attitude about the web.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm too old to change.
I was actually perspiring in here. He's getting me so upset.
Okay, I just wanted to mention it. Thank you for mentioning it, Carol.
Thank you for listening.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you do call the Humane Society, what kinds of information can they offer just, you know, basically?
They have a file system there. And various of us board members, past, present, and future, contribute some information that's consistent with what we'd like people to hear.
They also direct people to
dog training classes.
Dog training classes. People that own the dogs of that breed. All rescue groups. Anything like that. Rescue groups, I forgot to mention earlier, they're a good source
of information.
Now, explain from page one what a rescue group is.
Well, you want me to do that,
well,
too?
You're the expert.
Being a member of a rescue group, yes.
She is a rescue group.
Yes. A rescue group is an organization of people that take in dogs of their specific breed and rehome them into perhaps more appropriate homes. Dogs come to us from all kinds of situations, owner relinquishments, divorces, animal shelters. There's a rescue group for just about every breed of dog. And I think we do a very good job of rehoming those animals.
And these are people who have an interest in these specific breeds of dogs. So, I mean, they do put a lot of time, a lot of effort into into their individual groups.
That's very true. And all the dogs will, obviously, the people that do the rescue in that group have that breed of dog, so they're quite familiar with them.
How do you wind up in touch with some of the people that you get the dogs from? I mean, the Humane Society, there's a given or an animal shelter.
Shelters will contact us. And, you know, I hate to say this because Jim's probably just going to froth at the mouth, but most people find us through the Internet.
Because the evil Internet.
We are a self-supporting group. We don't have any money. We have no money.
There are three good sites on the Internet. There are 30 million sites, you know, so do the math.
We are goldenrescue.org, by the way. At any rate,
is that what the
it would be cost prohibitive, cost prohibitive to be listed in the telephone book or whatever, right. I mean, because we're throughout the state. So people find us, and when people want to, unfortunately, dispose of an animal, they will sometimes go that far to find rescue group. And it's very interesting to me the number of people that want another pet are now considering rescue as their first option.
And these are animals that are generally purebred.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're very honest. If we take in, for example, a golden mix, that's the way we make certain that people understand it's
or
a golden
if
mix.
If it comes from a shelter, you don't really have any written confirmation. That
well, you know, you can tell. I mean, yeah. The written confirmation, the pedigree and so
right.
forth.
Sometimes,
it's
almost
not
always,
worth it.
Not.
Actually, yeah. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. You can tell by looking at the animal.
Now, what kinds of things should people who would want to adopt a rescue dog keep in mind? Because, you know, they're not coming from a breeder. You don't know from puppyhood, you know, what the dog has gone through, that sort of thing.
Well, what we do when we get an adult dog in, we've taken and placed over 250 in the last year and a half.
Wow.
And, yeah, just in Illinois. We get the dogs and we place them in a foster home situation. And, you know, it could be with one of us or with one of our volunteers, and then they assess the dog and keep it, I'd say for a minimum of a month or so, and see how it behaves around cats and dogs and children and how it behaves in a family situation. Gives us a fairly good idea of how the dog is going to behave when it goes into a home.
So they're in a volunteer home for a set amount of time, at least before you adopt
them. Oh, yeah, they are.
So what should somebody look out for? What kinds of questions should people ask when they're adopting from a rescue group?
We have an adoption application and that they complete, and that covers many of the questions, of course, they'd ask them. 98% of our families have children, so that, of course, would be your primary consideration. Is the dog good with children? Obviously, if it's not, it wouldn't be placed in a home with children in the first place. Good with children, many people are drawn to rescue dogs because they're older and they don't want to deal with a house training issue. Well, that, to me, is a red flag because that's part and parcel of having an animal, is training, not just house training, but training the animal. They don't come pre-trained. Mm-hmm. So I don't always, you know, that's not a big selling factor for me that the dog is house trained or not.
Now, it would be a little tougher to, you know, house train an adult dog.
No, it's actually, I think it would be easier. Mm-hmm. You want to know the truth.
Yeah, they might have more control over their functions.
I mean, puppies, I mean, let's face it, they don't have a clue what's going on. And an older dog, even one that's been kept outdoors its whole life, is very easy to house train. You just have to have the right approach to it, that's all. It's a much easier job. But, you know, I had a woman I talked to the other evening, and she's gone all day, and she works a distance from home, so she can't come home for lunch. And she'd like an older dog. Well, we have to then match her up with the dog. I know what her requirements are. A dog that can be home alone all day long and not be terribly destructive and cope with the fact that there's no one there all day. So,
do you go to your bank of volunteers and say, hey, we've got somebody who fits this qualification. Do you have a dog in your family?
Yeah, we know.
Spending a lot of time
because we take the dogs in, we have a pretty good idea of their background, as long as they didn't come from a shelter.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it works.
Do you generally find enough adoptees or adopters rather than...
Yeah, unfortunately, because our breed is so popular, we have a good number of adoption applications out there.
You say unfortunately.
Because the breed is so popular.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad. That's why we get so many.
Yeah.
Nice I
miss you have more applications than dogs or more dogs than
we have more applications than dogs. And then
why is that unfortunate?
Because people aren't necessarily willing to wait the length of time it may take to get the dog that's most appropriate for them. Often I'll get someone call and they've just lost their dog, or they want one the next day. Well, that's not how it works. It can take, depending on what they're looking for. We get 3-to-1 applications for young, small, blonde, female golden retrievers.
Oh.
Yeah, I haven't known him too long.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, having more dogs than, having more applicants than dogs, I think.
It puts us in a good position.
Is a problem the Malamute Rescue people would like to have.
Yeah, see, that's a bit.
Because they don't have
It's difficult because they want a dog immediately.
So you have volunteers with a lot of dogs, in other words.
We have more dogs than we can find homes for.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not like Carol. I'm not as active in the rescue end of it. And also, we're out of the mainstream. The big rescue clubs are up in Chicago and in New York and those areas.
And then people aren't going in saying, I want a Malamute. It's generally the more popular dogs.
I don't know.
Well, people get a hold of us and for rescue.
Right.
We are not in the placement end. We usually house the animal.
Those people are valuable to every rescue group.
Yeah. But there are many more dogs than there are people that want them.
Mm-hmm.
So when Carol, I thought I misheard Carol, but I didn't.
I'll get anywhere from 5 to 10 applications a week.
Unfortunately, unfortunately for the Malamute group, it's the same situation that, you know, your animal shelters face as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why when she said unfortunately, I almost hit her. What do you mean?
Well, at least you were listening to me.
Yeah, well, I just woke up. That's why I thought I couldn't, did I misunderstand?
Well, we do get a lot of applications. And a lot of people, you know, it's an educational opportunity, and I don't know how this developed, but it did. But a lot of people think golden retrievers are just like, you know, mix and stir an instant dog that can tolerate abuse from everybody in the house, and you don't have to do anything with it.
And you can make generalizations about the breed, but I mean, you go from dog to dog, and you have different personalities.
Oh, of course,
obviously.
Of course, you do.
Boy, are they dumb! The males.
Some people think you know, because they're very compliant and easygoing, they're not too bright, and that's not true. But you know, that's a conception.
Oops, I'm sorry.
They think that you know, good family dog does not mean the kids can use them as their personal punching bag.
So for a first step, maybe the Humane Society would be a good place to call.
Always the Humane Society is a good place
to
go. Mm-hmm. And they have a list of rescue organizations there,
right,
too. So
Carol gets $10 every time she mentions the Humane Society. So
capitalism is working on this program, apparently.
It's $40 today.
You got to pay for the dog food somehow. It's $40. How could you forget the Humane Society site?
I'm going to hear about that for a long time.
We are out of time, unfortunately. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will be back next month, I believe. Do we have a date for them?
First Friday of the month.
First Friday of every
December
month. They're
7th?
Here to answer questions about dog behavior.
Oh,
a date
Lord.
That will live in infamy.
It's December 4th.
December 4th.
A day that lives in infamy.
And the first Friday of every month pretty much lives in
more
infamy.
More or less.
Some more than others.
Hey, happy birthday, Morning Edition.
20 years old.
20 years, yeah.
I've
been listening all 20 years, and boy, are my arms tired.
Where's the present?
Yeah. Here I am.
To remember it next time. Jim and Carol, thanks again for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tom.